reddened veil down over his eyes. Mannion hated bushwhackers as much as backshooters, card sharps, sky pilots, harpy women, and snake oil drummers. He heaved himself to his knees, set his hat on his head, grabbed both nickel-plated, ivory-handled Russian 44s residing in soft leather holsters, and clambered up the embankment. Joe Mannion was a big, broad-shouldered, sun-seared man who emoted great strength and toughness and a fair amount of wildness, for wild was the land he was from, right here in the Colorado Territory. Mannion's face was flat-planed and hard-lined, ever so vaguely Indian. His mother had been one-quarter Navajo and raised on one of the first ranches in the foothills of the Sawatch, along the Arkansas River. His father, long dead, had been a mountain man. Mannion's skin was ruddy, his eyes the deep cobalt of a mountain lake just after sunset. When angry, they blazed in sun-seasoned sockets. He had a thick head of wavy silver hair stitched with some remaining dark brown. It hung down well past his collar from beneath his high-crowned, broad-brimmed black Stetson. A long, thick gray mustache mantled his broad mouth. On Mannion's 6'4", 220-pound frame, not a pound of it tallow, he wore a brown corduroy shirt, red neck-knotted bandana, black denim pants, wide black belt with a brass buckle, and well-worn black boots. He was breathing hard, cursing under his breath, spitting dirt from his lips. Two more bullets tossed more rocks and gravel and a sage branch into the arroyo. The bullets were followed by the hiccuping reports of both rifles. The echoes of said reports hadn't died before Mannion lifted his head and both hog legs over the top of the cut, aimed quickly, narrowing his fierce blue eyes, and fired into two large sycamores standing on each side of the old Indian trail he'd been following, tracking cattle rustlers. He'd found them all right. The bushwhacker on the left, resembling a large, ungainly bird perched on a branch roughly halfway up the tree, gave a howl and threw away his rifle as Mannion's bullet punched him back sharply. He gave another howl as he lost his perch and toppled off the far side of the branch, turning two backward somersaults and losing his cream hat before landing with a resolute thud at the base of the tree. The second bushwhacker, in the tree on the opposite side of the trail from the first gutless tin horn, grimaced and clutched his left gloved hand to his upper left thigh as he fired his Winchester straight out before him over Mannion's head. The lawman cocked the big Russian in his right hand, aimed again quickly, but more carefully this time. The hog leg bucked, roaring. Mannion watched in satisfaction as the 44 caliber slug painted a purple welt in the dead center of the second spineless dry gulcher's forehead, just beneath the brim of his low-crowned, flat-brimmed black hat. The slug sent him the way of the first man, tumbling down, down, ricocheting off a lower branch with a crunching thud, then continuing down, down, before striking the ground with another resolute thud. He lay belly down, arms thrown out to both sides, the blown-out back of his head resembling a pound of fleshy ground beef glistening in the mid-afternoon sunshine, raining down on this forbidding canyon in the remote reaches of the Sawatch Range, formerly a playground of death for the Ute Indians, and whom Mannion had fought with some renown when he'd been stationed at nearby Fort Winslow. But these days, he rarely fought the mostly cowed Utes. Now it was mostly bank, train, and stagecoach robbers, as well as the occasional rustling, dry-gulching sons of bitches like the two that lay before him. Frank Colvin's men. Local rustlers. The rest were likely holed up at the abandoned Scully Ranch, farther up the trail in Bitterwater Canyon. Mannion gave a ragged sigh, tramped back down into the arroyo to retrieve his Stetson. He reshaped it, dusted it off, set it on his head,